From Illinois Public Media, this is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. When it comes to relationships, they say opposites attract. The introvert and the extrovert, maybe one person neat, the other messy, Oscar and Felix. But how does that work when people have opposing political viewpoints? When one person in a couple wants to make America great again, build that wall and lock her up, and the other, well, the other doesn't. I mean, there are policy disagreements, no doubt about that, but then when it comes to news consumption, how do you navigate that? Right? You hear different media outlets, some are left-leaning, some are right-leaning, you have your Fox News, your MSNBC, your Breitbart, your Huffington Post. Some people will only consume news from certain media outlets and completely avoid others. But in a relationship, there's always a need for compromise. And according to my next guest, though that may not necessarily be true with regards to news consumption. Emily Van Doon is an associate professor of communications at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champain. She recently published a study in which she had surveyed 67 individuals in relationships and learned how they consume news around partners with different political viewpoints. Emily Van Doon, welcome back to the 21st Show. Thanks for being with us again.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
And listeners, I want to invite you to join our conversation today as ever at 800-222-9455. Maybe you are in a politically blended relationship with somebody who does not share your views. How do you handle that? How do you talk about politics? And how do you consume news media together, especially? Let us know at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. We also asked our text messaging group about this, and we'll share some of their responses as we go along today. So, Emily, let's just start with the study itself. How was this study conducted?
Sure. So I conducted interviews with 67 individuals who, at the time of the interview, were in a cross-cutting relationship. So when we think of that, we think of people who are, you know, strongly partisan in terms of a Republican or a Democrat, and then dating, engaged, or married to somebody who is the opposite. And that also included some people who had potentially, like, you know, more independent stances with people who were more strongly partisan. And the interviews lasted, so I conducted these interviews from the very beginning, right before the pandemic, so February of 2020, all the way through the 2020 election, and then into the Biden administration, the first year of that administration. So I got a really interesting snapshot of, you know, how these relationships exist, the kinds of things that they do or do not struggle with. And one of the things that really surfaced from those interviews was how they negotiated or didn't negotiate news media and the role that that played in spurring conflict in their conversations.
You know, it's interesting, if they have conflict over news media, how did they talk about it with you? Did you have to have sort of secret meetings with people?
Yeah, it was interesting because, you know, some of these interviews I conducted during the pandemic, but like, the height of some of the social isolating. And so we had a lot of, like, I had a lot of people that I spoke to who had to, like, go into another room to have this conversation because their spouse
was always at home all the time with each other. Yes.
Right. It was an interesting time to be doing this work, for sure.
And talk about, you know, how representative your sample, or what did your sample end up looking like ultimately?
So because I did interviews, I wasn't trying to kind of reach some type of, you know, representative sample, but I was trying to get, you know, kind of a variety of types of relationships, of people with different backgrounds, different political preferences. And I really did speak to a wide variety of people. I spoke to women who were Trump supporters, who were with men that were not for Trump. We often think of it as the inverse, but there were also people who kind of broke some of these stereotypes when we think about these types of relationships. I spoke to a number of people who were stay-at-home moms, or women who were working, or men who, you know, were very Democratic and their partners were very Republican. So I had a really big cross-sample in terms of variety of relationships and variety of background.
You know, it's It's well established that political polarization is on the rise, certainly in the last decade or so. I looked up a stat. I found something from Bowling Green State University that found the average length of a first marriage is 21 years. That suggests to me that a lot of people who are coupled up now may have gotten with their partner before politics made everybody crazy in the last decade or so. I wonder what you found. Did people, you know, sort of have political views that presented themselves before they became a couple, or did that change over time?
Yeah, so that's a great point. I think, you know, there were both of those, instances where I saw kind of the temporality of the relationship matter. So I did see people who had been in relationships for a really long time, and then one changed their politics. So for example, there was a woman I spoke to. Her and her partner had been together for several years, and they had both been on the same page, both very much for Trump. And then her partner had decided during the first impeachment of Trump that he was actually really now against Trump and saw some of these violations as really problematic. And so he ended up switching and becoming a Democrat. And this was like during their relationship after years of them being on the same side. So I certainly saw that. And those instances ended up being really, really conflictual for people. It felt like a violation of their expectations and their sense of understanding their partner to see that change happen. Because as you said, polarization is increasing, but there's also like a lot that goes with that, right? Like we now associate a lot of different things with our political identities. We associate our values for the world and for humanity with our politics. And so that can create really big questions in relationships where you do want to be on the same page in terms of your values. And that was certainly the case for the couple that I mentioned there. But I also saw people who, you know, had entered into a relationship and never discussed politics, and then this came up, right? So they really started the relationship ignoring some of these differences, or maybe assuming that there weren't differences, and then those differences manifested around the 2020 election during this time when I was conducting these interviews. And for those, it became a turning point in the relationship of, oh, do I continue down this path, or is this a big enough deal for me to end the relationship? And in fact, several of the people that I spoke to were considering ending the relationship and or did end the relationship after the interview.
Wow. Do you feel, I suppose it's not fair to say if you feel responsible for that, but that's...
Well, I didn't, but Brian, now you make me feel like I...
All right. Well, let's get into the idea of news conception. What, because that's what you were, you know, the sort of heart of what you were looking at here. What made a news outlet inherently political to these couples?
Well, I think a lot of times, I mean, when scholars tend to look at, you know, the partisan lean of a news outlet, they tend to look at the audiences who consume those. So we think about like, oh, MSNBC, that's a very liberal news outlet because lots of liberals consume it. Same thing on the other side, Fox News tends to be a very conservative news outlet because conservatives consume it. We might also look at like their editorial content, right? So how do these news organizations cover different issues? Do they tend to side with more of the Democratic stance, or do they tend to side with more of a Republican stance? And those tend to be the way we think about it. And for the most part, I saw many of these couples thinking in similar ways. They knew, obviously, Fox News is a very conservative outlet, and MSNBC is potentially a more liberal outlet. And so many of those same calculations were happening for these couples. What was really tricky is that when you are sitting down at the end of the day and you're deciding, oh, I want to turn on news, if you're somebody who shares generally your partner's beliefs, then the news isn't a big deal, right? It's not something that you need to like figure out if this is like a touchy subject. Should we have this on? Which news are we selecting? I really want to watch, you know, CNN or MSNBC, but my partner really wants to watch Fox News. How do we make that selection? And that selection process was really conflictual for these partners, particularly ones where we saw, you know, the really intense differences, like a partner being very much for Trump and another partner being against Trump. You know, those selections became points of contention that would drive argument, that would drive, you know, relational strife. And so for the most part, I saw a lot of these people either, you know, leaving the room when that kind of news came on, or setting boundaries around what news could be on and when it couldn't, and then what news they both could agree to watch and what news they decided they needed to watch separately.
Yeah, we'll talk more about that. How did they end up, like, what are some of the arrangements that people made that you learned about here?
Sure. So, like, there are really healthy arrangements, right? And then there are maybe potentially less healthy arrangements. I'll start like the really great example of maybe how a good way to construct this kind of negotiation process. So there was a one of my interviewees, Kevin, who had been in a long-term relationship with his partner, and they were very much on different sides of the spectrum. He was very liberal, his partner's very conservative. Partner votes Republican almost consistently, and Kevin votes very consistently Democratic. They have children. So it was important to them that when they came together, that they, wanted to model for their kids what it was to consume news. We here in this house, we watch the news, we're attentive to what's going on in public affairs. And so what they did was they said, hey, look, we have these really different preferences for news. Kevin really wanted to consume CNN. He really preferred a little bit more of like a liberal slant to his news. And then his partner really wanted to consume Fox News. And so they said, look, we can consume those separately. They put a really big boundary around this kind of partisan news selection. They said, we're not going to consume that together because it's too much of an argument. But what we can agree on is that ABC Nightly News was the thing that they both thought was fair, that they both thought was a way to get information and to model for their kids what it looks like to consume news. So that's what they turned on every night. And all of the partisan media or all of the potentially conflictual media, they consume separately on their phones or on their way to work. They would listen to it on the radio or whatever way that they were consuming. And so that was kind of like a really excellent model that really worked for them, where they were able to, still talk about things, still have news on in the house, still engage in public affairs conversation for the modeling for their kids, but not have it be this really partisan, intense argument. Then there were other ones, right, where you had another, I had another couple where, she was very much for Trump. She wanted to watch the news whenever he was on. She really wanted to like engage in conversation about Trump, and her partner, who did not want to talk about Trump, got really upset and he would just leave the room. Or other instances where couples would watch news together and then they get into an argument and then they would never discuss how to manage that in the future. So it really came down to really successful relationships where they managed these differences, set boundaries around what news can we deal with together and what news can we not.
That's so interesting because you think that, people who have shared values, presumably outside of, what is the discourse in American politics, would have a certain amount of trust in each other and might be able to find in the middle, because you hear that, right? You're not going to change anyone's mind on Twitter, but maybe if it's somebody you really know, you will see more value in the other side's positions. It sounds like that wasn't necessarily always the case in the people you were talking with.
No, and I think, something kind of a broader implication of this work is we like to think maybe the answer to, solving polarization and some of these, concerns around how we connect with one another across lines of division is that we should be exposed to one another, right? Have this meaningful contact with people who are different than you or who believe different things than you. And some of this work is like, here's very meaningful contact, right? Here are these people in very like intimate, intense relationships where they are having meaningful contact and they have important differences, but I'm not seeing that that's helping polarization, at least not all the time.
So, what about people who have to hide their news consumption from their partner, right? I mean, I suppose there's one say, well, that could be healthy, right? Because then you just kind of avoid the subjects that you don't agree on and focus on the ones you do. But I mean, there can be a negative connotation to that too, right?
Oh, totally, right. Like if you are only consuming news by yourself, there's no checks or balances. You don't have any type of exposure to something different. There were cases in work since I've done since this study that, lots of people who end up like leaving relationships due to their differences was because their partner was consuming news separately and became obsessed with some particular, theory or conspiracy theory or went down a rabbit hole of news consumption so much that they became really almost radicalized. So there are definite consequences when you are hiding your news consumption. You're not engaging in, discussion about it with people who think differently than you, because it does kind of, there is evidence, over a bunch of research in political communication looking at the effects of what we call selective exposure. When you only pick news that matches what you think, that really can lead to more polarized attitudes and beliefs. And that is certainly something that I see happening here, and potentially a really big downside of being in a relationship where you feel like you do have to hide what you're consuming.
All right, let me invite listeners to join us again at 800-222-9455. We got a text message today from Sarah in Rockford who said, "We are both non-affiliated conservatives, but I'm more centrist than my partner. My partner often wants to talk about politics and gets upset when I ask him, 'So what are you going to do about it?' I try to get him to be more active if he's so passionate about the issues and follows topics daily." She added, "I often have to put a stop to the conversation because we'll end up arguing with me playing the devil's advocate." We also heard from Kate in Nokomis who said, "We do have different views and we consume different news content separately. We don't have political conversations because there is no way the other will change their mind, so it's not something we discuss because it will only end in disagreement." Thank you so much, Sarah and Kate, for sharing your experiences with us today. If you want to join us now, 800-222-9455 is the number to join our conversation. We are talking with University of Illinois Professor Emily Van Doon, who is in communications at the Urbana campus. She surveyed 67 individuals and relationships about how they consume news around partners with different political views. We're going to talk more with Professor Van Doon when we return. This is The 21st Show. Stay with us. This is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about couples with different political views and how they compromise, or maybe they don't compromise, on their news consumption. Our guest is Associate Professor of Communications Emily Van Doon from the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. She surveyed 67 people to get an idea on how they consume news with or without their partners. You can join us by giving us a call at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Maybe you're in a relationship with someone with different political views. How do you handle talking about politics, and how do you follow the news in a way that won't create strife at home? 800-222-9455. All right, Emily, did you find cases of someone from maybe one political leaning purposely watching news from the other side, so to speak, you know, the Republican watching MSNBC?
Yes, totally. So one of the things that just totally fascinates me in this data is how many times I heard people say that they would intentionally watch their partner's preferred media as a way to kind of like inoculate themselves, right? Almost like I'm trying to figure out what my partner is going to watch so that when we have a discussion or if they bring this up, that I have something to say back to it, almost as like a preemptive point in their argument. And that was so interesting to me because we often think, you know, as scholars in particular, we kind of just like take for granted, well, people watch the news that they want to watch, right? Like, or they're selecting media or viewing media even online that they want to engage with or that they might support. But really what also happens is that people might kind of like in a way kind of hate watch news as a way to prepare themselves for arguments with people who might agree with it, which was, I think, kind of surprising to me as I did this work.
You know, that reminds me of something I experienced with a member of Congress I was interviewing once. You know, I consume pretty what I would consider mainstream news outlets, right? New York Times, Washington Post, LA Times, that sort of thing. And I was interviewing a Republican member of Congress, and he made reference to police officers having water thrown on them. And I had no idea. And then I Googled it. Of course, it was all over Fox News. But it's like, if you're not, some of these news outlets, if you are not like following, they focus on such narrow, you know, small local stories that they bring to national prominence, you may have no idea what people are talking about.
Totally, right? And like a lot of the research around news consumption says that news sets our agenda, right? And kind of to your point, like if we're watching different news, we have different agendas. Like what is on top of mind for somebody watching Fox News is going to be really different maybe from somebody, or at least the spin of that will be different from the agenda from somebody watching MSNBC. So yes, totally. And it was often a way for some of these these couples, or at least the individuals that I spoke to from these couples, where they would want to be prepared and know, well, what's going on Fox News so that I can speak to the agenda that my partner has in their mind.
We got a text message also from Karen in Champaign, who says when she was younger, quote, relationships with people who had other values helped me understand and fully develop my own values, especially when we both felt comfortable discussing issues deeply with friends and family. So how about that? Were there couples that did take anything positive away from their experiences?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, it's easy to point to a lot of the issues of conflict here because that tends to be what, you know, people were really harping on. But there were also cases where I saw people managing it really well. So, you know, in this particular study, Kevin, who managed their boundaries around news consumption, is a good example. But there are others that I spoke to. I mean, I've done lots of interviews even since doing this work, and I continue to do them through the election this year, of like people who really do have productive conversations, who do come with their partner and discuss issues, and do potentially, you know, come to a consensus on something, or walk away from the conversation where they do have a respect, an increased respect for one another. I think the possibility for that to happen is really contingent upon, you know, is the conversation respectful? And are we talking about values, and can we find areas of common agreement rather than just trying to identify places that we don't agree? And in instances where that happens a lot in a relationship, it can be a really, really constructive thing. I think it's just harder as politics becomes so personal, as it becomes this identity, a social identity, that we see people being more reactive in these types of conversations, and it becomes diluted to a less respectful kind of interaction, perhaps, than it was a few decades ago.
Interesting, interesting. All right, let's go to the phones at 800-222-9455. David is calling from Mount Morris on line one. David, thank you for calling in. David, are you with us?
Hello?
Hi, David. Thank you for calling in.
Nathan, but yes.
Oh, Nathan. All right. This is Nathan. All right. Go ahead, Nathan.
My wife's a professor at the University of Illinois. She's a senior professor. She's tenured. It's a very weird situation in the University of Illinois, and actually in the entire place, because being conservative, you feel ashamed to be conservative. But also, in our own relationship, I'm less conservative than she is. And it's very hard. It's very difficult. We are both kind of liberal in most things as far as abortion and stuff like that. But it's very difficult to be living in this community, especially in the Champaign, Illinois community, to deal with a heart that if we are conservative, we are bad. And she feels that she cannot even say she's conservative, because that makes her feel like a bad person.
Huh.
And I also want to know, like, she is a tenure professor and stuff like that. She's afraid to put her own stuff out there. And it actually has hurt ourselves as far as relationship. I'm less conservative than she is. She used to be a Democrat, but now she's a Republican. Now she's going far right. And we have fights every day about how conservative or liberal to be.
How do you manage news consumption in your household?
What I do, I try not to watch. Do not watch Fox News. Do not watch MSNBC. Do not watch CNN. Do not watch any of those things. Try to do the major things. But even I have a journalist degree from Temple University, so I try to old school things. Just watch the basic stuff. And even journalism has gone so bad these days. You can't. Everyone's. It's not the straight up news you used to get back in the day. It's very difficult.
Very difficult. Well, Nathan, thank you so much for the call. I really appreciate that. Emily Van Doon, let me ask you, and I don't know if you want to respond to anything in there. It did remind me, it put me in mind of some of your past work. We actually talked about it on the show. You did this research that came out in the form of a book called Democracy Thrives in Darkness, where people felt they had to hide their political views, not just from their partner, but from their entire community. We heard Nathan mention a little bit of that. Take it where you will.
Yeah, so I guess Nathan, I would echo kind of your identifying that your political beliefs and how that manifests in your relationship is compounded by where you live, right? And to your point, Brian, my book, which you mentioned, Democracy Lives in Darkness, is about precisely that, like that when we are living in places that don't share our political beliefs, but that experience can be very isolating. And in fact, it's only enhanced over the past several decades, where we now see this kind of what we would call geographic sorting, where people are likely to live around people who share their beliefs, and that the experience of being in the minority in that space really does stifle political expression. And I think kind of what I have found in the work so, that I've done with these cross-cutting relationships so far has been that that experience of being isolated geographically, you know, being feeling like you're the minority of your community, and then also feeling like in your family that you don't have people who agree with you, whether that's a spouse or others in your family, that is really a compounded experience that can create not necessarily shame around your political identity, but certainly a sense of isolation, a sense that you can't be political, that you don't have the ability to express what you think. So for instance, I had interviewed a woman who her husband and her had very different political beliefs, and she had lived in a place in Wisconsin, has since moved to a different place that was much more conservative. And so she felt like, well, here I am. I live in a place that people don't share my beliefs. And now I'm surrounded by my husband who doesn't share my beliefs and his family who doesn't share my beliefs. And it became this kind of experience of what we would call it multiplex disagreement. This experience of I'm constantly being surrounded by people who don't share what I think. And that really does do damage on people's sense of their political engagement, their political expression. So I guess I would say to Nathan, like that is very much echoed in some of the work that I do here, that where you are, not just in your relationships, but also your community, can have a compound effect on how you feel in your ability to express your beliefs.
And we also had a call from David. We lost the connection there, but he said in his relationship, they don't see eye to eye, but agree to disagree. They don't talk politics in front of their kids, so the kids can decide for themselves and avoid the politically charged upbringing they had. Emily, it strikes me that that's a kind of a different choice these days, right? As a lot of people have sort of taken politics as almost like a religious belief to them, right? It's one of the chief ways they define themselves, and not imparting your values to your kids. That seems like it might be, and I don't know if this is, you know, far beyond your research, but how young people in a household get involved when we're talking about, you know, what is on TV at night.
Yeah, so I have another kind of track of this work that's really ongoing that I've been doing with a colleague of mine at the university named Kirsten Poole. And we're working on some work around how these relationships affect the socialization of their children. So precisely kind of what the caller David was talking about, you know, what do you do? Do you try and just avoid politics and not socialize your children? Do you socialize them separately where you try and exert an influence on your kids' politics and then your partner does, but you never do it together? Like, how do you negotiate that process? And so much of what we've found has been really negative, that actually people who are in these more cross-cutting relationships are less likely to engage in socializing activities like watching the news with their kids, talking about politics with their kids, going with their kids to vote or bring their kids with them to vote. So, you know, I think there is some question about how do you do it? Is there a way you can still engage your kids in political discussion without it being this provocative point of conflict between you and your partner? Can your differences be put aside to still bring your kids into the fold of political life and public affairs? Because that is such an important element where they do get that practice and that information.
I think we have time for one more caller here. Dan is calling from Carbondale on line one. Dan, thank you for calling in.
Hey, can you hear me okay?
Can hear you great. Go ahead.
Hey, so I'm concerned about what may not be being reported. You know, do conservative news outlets spend any time reporting that an impartial civil jury has found Donald Trump guilty of sexually assaulting a woman, that kind of thing?
Oh, that's a great point, Dan. Thank you so much for that. Emily, how about that? We do seem to live in different fact environments depending on the media we consume these days, right?
Totally. And that has huge complications for people in these types of relationships, right? It's almost like, and Fox News, you know, it does leave out a lot of things. There's a lot of spin. And some might argue that that's the same for more liberal-leaning news sources. And that does create almost like different realities, which really feels different than, oh, we just have different political preferences. To have different realities about, you know, I believe this thing that is a fact and my partner doesn't think it's a fact, that's a very different experience than just being like, well, I think that tax policy should be this and my partner thinks it should be this, right? Some of the work that I've been doing since this study has looked specifically at people who have ended relationships due to politics. And a lot of the motivations there are around precisely what the caller was talking about, right? About this experience of a different reality. At the end of the day, they felt like, oh, I couldn't be in this relationship because I thought something was a fact and we couldn't even agree on that. And it became impossible to have conversation. And so I think that is an absolute reality for many in these couples and a reason why a lot of people end up leaving the relationship.
I may get my journalism card revoked here, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say maybe it's best for some people just to turn off the TV, put down the smartphone, go outside, touch the grass. What are some of the best practices you heard for breaking out of these toxic patterns when it comes to news consumption?
Yeah, I think taking time apart is good, especially if it's getting heated, people kind of walking away from that. Participating together in an activity that they both enjoy that has nothing to do with politics is really helpful. But again, I think that if you are looking for a long-term solution to this negotiation process or conflict that comes from news, I think it really comes to, we have to talk about it. We have to set bound. We have to acknowledge that this is a point of contention for us. We've got to set boundaries around what we can and cannot watch together. And we have to be sensitive to the fact that, you know, we're allowed to have differences or different perspectives. And, you know, let's figure out a way to manage these differences that's constructive for both of us.
I think this will probably be the last question we have time for, only about a minute and a half left. But, you know, I mentioned that stat earlier, the average length of the first marriage in the U.S. is 21 years. A lot of this polarization has kind of really ramped up since, you know, a lot of presumably marriages today began. I wonder if people marinating in today's political environment would even get together with someone who disagrees with them. Did your research give you any insight into that? I know you're not a relationship counselor, but I wonder what you think of that.
Yeah, so there's been a lot of research looking at what they call like relational homophily. So looking at people who opt into relationships based on, do we share political beliefs? And this happens on both sides, right? We hear these kind of anecdotes about conservative dating apps or liberal dating apps, or how can I cue to someone I'm looking at on, you know, a dating app that I like Trump or I don't like Trump, right? And so there's all these ways that people do go above and beyond to try and select people who share their beliefs. And that is increasingly the case, and data can really back that up. But I still find that people are ending up in relationships where they don't share beliefs, or at least the full extent of their beliefs. And so, yes, totally, we are trending in the direction of people are opting for partners who share their beliefs. But there are still many out there that continue to get into relationships where they don't. And I think that's interesting, and it can tell us a lot about the value of that exposure and how those relationships might inform how we do or do not like improve the polarization we've been talking about the whole time.
Professor Emily Van Doon of the University of Illinois, thank you so much for being with us today and sharing your research with us.
Thank you for having me.
And Professor Van Doon's previous book I mentioned, it's called Democracy Lives in Darkness. More to come here on The 21st Show. Stay with us.